the cholera outbreak. After fleeing from Rwanda, more than 1,000 witnesses and interested people stayed at the Goma Kingdom Hall and on the adjoining plot of land. Tragically, as a result of the large number of refugees, there was an outbreak of cholera in Goma. The Congo-Kinshasa branch quickly sent medicine to combat the epidemic, and Brother Van Bussel flew from Nairobi to Goma with 60 cartons of medicine. The Kingdom Hall was temporarily used as a hospital, and efforts were made to isolate the sick. Loïc Damelon and another brother, both medical doctors, along with Amabel Habimana, a medical assistant from Rwanda, gave of themselves unsparingly. Brother Amel from France was also of great help during all those problems, as were the many other brothers and sisters with medical experience who came as volunteers to care for the sick. Despite the great efforts made to prevent it, more than 150 brothers and interested people were infected, and about 40 died before the spread of this deadly disease could be checked. Later, a large plot of land was rented, which would be used as a refugee camp for Jehovah's Witnesses. Hundreds of small tents were set up, and a large tent sent from Kenya served as a hospital. American health workers who visited were impressed by the cleanliness and orderliness of the camp. By early August 1994, the Relief Committee in Goma was caring for 2,274 refugees, witnesses, children, and interested people. At the same time, there were many other refugee brothers in Bukavu and Uvira, eastern Congo, as well as in Burundi. Another 230 were in a refugee camp in Tanzania. When the brothers from the translation office in Kigali were obliged to flee to Goma, they rented a house so that they could continue translation. This work was possible because the brothers had managed to save a computer and a generator during the war, and they moved them from Kigali to Goma. In Goma, telephone and mail services were virtually non-existent. However, with the help of witnesses working at the airport, the brothers sent translation material and other mail on a weekly flight from Goma to Nairobi. Brothers at the Kenya branch returned mail to Goma in the same way. Emmanuel Ingirente and two other translators continued to translate as best they could, though the circumstances were difficult. They had to skip articles of the Watchtower because of the war, but the skipped articles were later translated and published in special brochures that the brothers studied at their congregation book study. The following is from page 185 of the printed edition. Jehovah will chase after us. Emmanuel Ngirente, born 1955, baptized 1982. Profile, member of the Rwanda Branch Committee and overseer of the translation department.
In 1989, I was pioneering in eastern Rwanda. Then, at the end of that year, I was assigned to the translation office. Having no translation experience, I was shocked and did not feel that I was up to the challenge. However, I started working on three publications. We found a house to rent, and we got some dictionaries. Sometimes I worked right through the night, drinking coffee to keep awake. When the invading army attacked in October 1990, certain people suspected Jehovah's Witnesses of involvement with the invading forces. The security agents began to check. Since I was working at home, it appeared to them that I was unemployed, so they wanted to know what I was doing. One day, they made a surprise search. I had been typing all night, and at 5 o'clock in the morning, I tried to sleep. Suddenly, the call came for me to leave home to participate in a community work. While I was away, the local authorities ransacked my house. When I got back, my neighbors told me that a policeman and a local counselor had spent an hour reading through my translation manuscripts, which repeatedly referred to Jehovah. Eventually, they said, "Let's leave this house, or Jehovah will chase after us." Returning to the account.
Life in the refugee camps. While the population was still fleeing from Kigali, Francine, who had fled to Goma after the murder of her husband Anani, was transferred to one of the camps set up by the witnesses. She describes life in the camp. Each day, some brothers and sisters were assigned to prepare food, We prepared a simple breakfast consisting of millet or maize gruel. We also prepared the midday meal. After performing our duties, we were free to share in the field service. We witnessed mainly to family members in our own camp who were not witnesses, and also to those living outside the camp. After some time, however, the Interahamwe militiamen who were in other camps were angry to see the witnesses in camps that were separate from the other refugees, and the situation became dangerous. By November 1994, it became clear that it was safe for the brothers to return to Rwanda. Doing so, in fact, was advisable in view of the insecurity in the non-witness camps in Congo. But the return would be difficult. The Interahamwe were hoping to regroup and attack Rwanda, and in their view, anyone leaving Congo to return to Rwanda was a deserter. The brothers informed the government in Rwanda that Jehovah's Witnesses, who had taken a neutral stand in the war and had not participated in the genocide of the Tutsi, wanted to be repatriated. The government advised the brothers to negotiate with the United Nations High Commission for Refugees, or UNHCR, which had vehicles that could be used for the repatriation. However, because the militiamen would have stopped them from returning to Rwanda, the brothers had to use strategy. The brothers announced that there was to be a special assembly day in Goma, and assembly banners were prepared. They then secretly notified the witnesses of the repatriation to Rwanda. So as not to arouse suspicion, the brothers were instructed to leave all their belongings behind in the camps and go with just their Bibles and songbooks, as though they were going to an assembly. Francine remembers that they walked for some hours and finally found trucks waiting to take them to the border. On the Rwanda side of the border, the UNHCR arranged to transport them to Kigali and then on to their home areas. Thus, most of the brothers with their families and interested ones were repatriated to Rwanda in December 1994. The Belgian newspaper Le Soir of December 3, 1994 reported, 1,500 Rwandan refugees decided to leave Zaire, Congo, because they felt that their security was not sufficiently guaranteed. They are Jehovah's Witnesses who had set up their own camp above the Katala camp. Jehovah's Witnesses were particularly persecuted by the previous government because they refused to carry arms and to participate in political rallies. After returning to Rwanda, Francine was able to attend a district convention in Nairobi. Having been comforted after the death of her husband and built up by association with the brothers and sisters, Francine returned to the translation office, which had been re-established in Kigali. Later, she married Emmanuel Ngirente, and they continue working in the branch office. How was Francine able to cope with her feelings during the war? She said, "We had only one thought in mind at that time. We must endure to the end. We decided not to dwell on the terrible things that were happening. I remember finding comfort in Habakkuk 3:17-19, which speaks of finding joy in difficult situations. The brothers and sisters gave me much encouragement. Some wrote me letters. This helped me to keep a positive spiritual attitude. I remembered that Satan has many tricks. If we dwell on one set of problems, we might become victims of another. If we are not vigilant, we might weaken in one way or another." Return to Rwanda. Brother Van Bussel greatly assisted the returning brothers. He explains, "A restart program was inaugurated to help the brothers get back on their feet after the war, including those who had stayed in Rwanda and lost almost everything. Appointed brothers visited every congregation to assess the needs. Families and individuals were given a package of supplies according to their circumstances. The brothers understood that after 3 months they would have to take care of themselves. Of course, attention was given to the spiritual needs of the brothers. The translation team returned to their original location in Kigali. Brother Van Bussel recalls that the house that had served as our office was riddled with bullet holes, but most of the books in the depot were still there. For months afterward, they found bullets in cartons of literature. One of the translators even found a hand grenade in the garden. The following year, about October 1995, the translation team moved into a much larger and more convenient building on the other side of town. This rented building was used as the office and living quarters until a new branch office was built in 2006. It was like the resurrection. By December 1994, most of the brothers had returned from Congo just in time for the district convention, which had the appropriate theme, Godly Fear. It was scheduled to be held on the grounds of one of the Kingdom Halls in Kigali. Brothers from France, Kenya, and Uganda came to attend. On Friday morning, the grounds of the hall were filled with brothers. One sister recalls, "It was touching to see brothers and sisters embracing each other with tears in their eyes. This was the first time they had seen one another since the start of the war. They were discovering friends that they had given up for dead." Another said, "It was like the resurrection." Gunta Reshka was among the brothers visiting from Kenya. He said, "What a joy it was to meet again after all the troubles and to see who had survived." There was, however, a problem. The authorities had concerns about such a large crowd meeting together. In the early afternoon, armed soldiers arrived and said that because of security fears, the assembly was canceled. We had to leave the place immediately. We took some time to encourage the friends, but finally had to return to Nairobi, disappointed that the brothers had not been able to enjoy the convention program. However, as discouraging as that was, we felt we had done all we could to encourage our brothers privately to continue in the faith, and we left with the conviction that they were determined to do just that. Now that a measure of peace had returned to the country, many people of Rwandan origin who were living outside the country decided to return. Some also came who had been born outside Rwanda after their parents fled during the ethnic and political upheavals of the late 1950s and 1960s. Among this influx were people who had learned the truth in other countries. For example, James Munyaburanga and his family embraced pure worship in the Central African Republic. Because the new government in Rwanda was eager to offer government posts to returning exiles, Brother Munyaburanga was offered a job. However, after returning to Rwanda, he faced opposition and ridicule from his relatives and workmates because he chose to live by Christian principles. Eventually, he requested early retirement and became a regular pioneer. He is now a legal representative of the local organization. Ngira Byakunsi Masariki learned the truth in Eastern Congo. He said, "Because I was a Tutsi, I had endured discrimination for many years. When I came into contact with Jehovah's Witnesses, it was as though I were on a new planet. It was like a miracle to associate with serious people who lived in harmony with what they taught. This love was even more evident during the genocide of Tutsi in 1994. Brothers hid my family and protected us. I was invited to Bethel in 1998, where I now serve with my wife, Emerance. I eagerly await the new world where all prejudice and discrimination will be a thing of the past and the earth will be filled with people calling on Jehovah's name and living together in unity."